Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, even though Ireland still has one of the lowest divorce rates in the world, the figures have, for various reasons, tacked up slightly in recent years. But getting divorced in your 20s and getting divorced in your 50s can be completely different propositions in terms of familial and financial complications. Keith Walsh is a family law solicitor. Good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon, Sean.
In your experience, at least, is there an age group within which you tend to see more divorces?
You tend to see more divorces, really, people in their 40s and 50s. I mean, the marriage age is very late in Ireland. It's 37 for men and 34 for women. So, I mean, really, people don't get going in terms of marriage and divorce until really their late 30s and 40s. So so then you see people in their 50s. But again, one of the big factors in deciding how much a person will get on a divorce is the length of time of the marriage. There's no automatic 50-50 split. So, again, the length of marriage is very important.
Right. OK. And they did, because it used to be you had to be separated for 4 out of the previous 5 years. They have changed that rule. So when did they change that rule?
They changed it. There was a referendum in 2018 and it was introduced in 2019. And I think Josepha Madigan, who was the TD who brought that in, cross-party, that made a huge difference because people, I mean, if you think about it, if in your 30s and you have to wait 4 years to get divorced and marry somebody else, I mean, that's terrible, particularly, say, if you want to have children with your new partner or spouse. So I think 2 years is probably too long. I think it should be brought back to 1 year living in apart. The reason it was so long was because there was such a difficulty passing divorce in Ireland in the mid-90s. It really only got through by a whisker because they said, well, you have to be separate and apart for 4 years. So I think the time has now come for us to say, look, if you're living separate and apart for 1 year, you can get a no-fault divorce. It's 2 years at the minute. I just think that's too long. It's unfair still.
Yeah. And all divorce in Ireland is no fault.
All divorce in Ireland is no fault.
Yeah. Yeah. And when it comes to, though, you know, the terms of the divorce, you know, and those kind of negotiations, I suppose, take place before people appear in court.
Yes.
And they can be very fraught.
Yeah, they can be. I mean, the things that are particularly fraught are to do with the children. That can be a cause of real concern. Generally, in a lot of cases, the mother will get primary care and control and the children will see their father maybe 3 or 4 nights or 2 nights out of 14 nights. And that can be a cause of contention. Other issues, money can be a huge issue. Pensions can be another issue. Maintenance for the children. School fees can often be an issue. Where children go to school, at the minute the secondary school places are out, and I've quite a number of cases where parents don't agree on what the best secondary school for a child is. And again, you try and agree it. Almost all divorces are agreed outside court where possible, but where one of the two people doesn't accept what's on offer or thinks it's unreasonable, or where maybe they're being slightly unreasonable, the case won't settle, and then you do need a judge to decide it.
Yeah. Is that kind of fair on the judge to a certain extent, because they're working within a very specific time frame on the day?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But again, you have pleading, so both parties' position is set out. There's quite a lot of vouching and financials. And again, generally, nobody will turn up in court without having had a couple of goes at negotiating it. So you can give the judge a steer as to where the two sides are at and the judge can get an idea. But it's really important if you can't settle it. And again, a good family lawyer's job is to try and settle it outside court. But if you can't settle it outside court, that there is somebody willing to make the final decision. So unfortunately, it does fall to the judge. But it's very important that the process finishes, because otherwise it could drag on interminably. And, you know, somebody once said a divorce can either be slow torture or quick torture. And most people prefer quick torture.
Yes, indeed. Though in an emotionally heightened state,
exactly,
people aren't always in a position to make. Is there an argument for making it standard within a divorce procedure that you have to go into mediation first?
There is an argument for it, but the difficulty is Ireland has signed up to a thing called the Istanbul Convention, which is about a 10-year-old Council of Europe convention. And what that says is it can't be made mandatory for people where there's any allegation or background of domestic violence to be compelled to go to mediation. So I think mediation, with the exception perhaps of domestic violence, the difficulty about domestic violence or victims of domestic violence is they're quite shy in terms of volunteering even to their own lawyers about the history of things. And again, to compel somebody where there may be domestic violence, they haven't spoken up about it, and they're forced then in the context of a mediation to say, well, look, it's not appropriate because there is this background. I didn't want to get into it because it is a no-fault divorce, but I'm now saying it because I don't want to be in the same room or whatever. So I think we have to be careful just about mediation in terms of the interpersonal dynamic of the two people. So I don't agree that it should be made compulsory. I do think it should be tried where possible. But I think making it compulsory, there's a voluntary element to it as well. But it's certainly, I think you should be open to collaborative law, arbitration, anything that keeps you away from the courthouse and it involves you trying to work it out, whether with lawyers and legal advice or whatever way to get a good divorce and one that both people can move on, work with the children, work with each other into the future. And just because you're divorced doesn't mean you don't have to have some kind of reasonable relationship.
Yeah, and of course, especially if there's kids concerned, they're still parents to those children. Though to put it a bit crudely, is it often a trade-off between money and kids?
No, not most of the time. Most of the time, most people are reasonable when they get divorced and they can agree something in the best interest of the children and they agree something that's kind of child-focused. The difficulty is when you maybe get into stuff that's more parent-focused and where maybe in some cases it works out where you have 50-50 childcare where you split it right down the middle and the children are with one parent half the time, another parent half the time. That works in certain scenarios, but in other scenarios it mightn't work. But no, there's definitely not a trade-off in most cases and there shouldn't be. Now, there are in extreme instances on both sides where you've maybe financial control as an extreme on one side or on another side you might have people who try to weaponize children and there's this concept of parental alienation, which really means that one of the parents, generally the one with custody, which in a lot of cases is the mother, might be refusing access because they're unhappy about maybe the terms or the situation of the divorce. But I mean, in certainly in the clients I deal with, generally in a marriage when it doesn't work out, one of the two people is a little bit ahead of the other in that maybe they worked out first that it wasn't working for them and they exit the marriage or there may have been another relationship. But generally, it's people drifting apart. But the person who's slightly ahead of the other one usually has kind of processed everything and is maybe a year or 6 months ahead of them. So the second person, it kind of is caught by surprise by the fact the marriage is over. It's difficult for them to deal with it. And they have to, and sometimes people just need a bit of time to work it out. And there's no point in pressurizing them to move on quickly. First of all, you have to process it in your head, provided you're not, it's not to the detriment of either the children or the spouse.
Yeah. I assume, though, that if it's a couple in their 20s and there's no kids involved, that's more straightforward than if you're in your 40s and there's kids and pensions and insurance policies.
Certainly in their 20s or 30s, the divorces I've done, they're much more straightforward because generally people haven't accumulated many assets. If there is a house, there's not much equity in it. There's not a huge amount of savings. Pensions are really something for another time. And if there are children, they're probably pretty young and you're not getting into the huge issues about what school they go to and the care and custody and stuff. And also remember, if you're at the end of a 20 or 25 year relationship and if you've been the homemaker or the mother who stayed at home and looked after the children, there's a lot more complicated issues going on in terms of, well, you've provided 25 or 30 years of your life. Your husband has been able to go out to work and earn money. How do you balance those two things up? That's a constant difficulty, I think, in any of those cases. So the longer the marriage, the more complex the sacrifices both sides have made and the harder it is to weigh them up to try and come to a fair solution that works for both people.
Yeah, so but there's no kind of statutory divvying up of, say, if there's a pension involved or an insurance policy involved.
No, there's no. What there is in Ireland, we have an incredibly flexible approach, which works in terms of each case is taken on its own facts. But it's determined by precedent or case law from particularly the High Court and the Family Court or the Supreme Court or Court of Appeal. And that generally says, well, look, both people, proper provision is the yardstick. So both people have to be properly provided for and the children have to be properly provided for. In a lot of cases, if you're married for 40 years and the husband has a pension and the wife doesn't, well, obviously the pensions have to be equalised or made fairly equal to make it fair to both people. You also would have to take into account if somebody's entitled maybe to a state pension and other things. But there is no magic formula, unfortunately. Each case kind of turns on its own facts. But generally, the yardstick is proper provision. Both people will need somewhere to live. If they can, rents and property prices are a huge problem for people getting separated.
Oh, yeah, I'd imagine
now,
so.
You know?
Yeah. Theoretical question. If everything's sorted out, that both parties have kind of negotiated their deal and it's the day before the divorce, the actual, you know, finalising the divorce that they go into court, but she wins 175 grand on the cash machine. Does he have any claim on that?
Well, there is a line of case law. And I mean, when I started off, I was in the Legal Aid Board and I acted for the spouses of people who didn't win the lotto. The people who did win the lotto disappeared. And unfortunately, the spouses were left going to the Legal Aid Board because they'd no money. And there is a line of case law now that says... that maybe inheritances or personal injuries cases that you might get a personal injury or a windfall, such as a lucky win like that, could be kept out of it. But they're only kept out of it if it would be in the interest of justice and also if it wouldn't affect things. So somebody who already has quite a lot of money and wins 175,000, it's more likely that won't make a huge difference. However, if there aren't many assets and someone wins 175,000, it's very likely it would be taken into account.
Yes, indeed. Keith, thanks so much for coming into us today. That was Keith Walsh, their family law solicitor.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.